Savage, and I'm here today with
Charlie Lord,
Ani,
and Austin.
All right, yeah. So we're back, and we're in our virtual green beers, and today we're going to talk about a couple great beers from Trillium, one from Spencer and the Monks over there. Ani's got some great water to talk about, and then we're going to also talk about sustainability and COVID. You know, we're still here, we're still doing it. Sustainability really isn't going away, and it's not going to go away. But we're going to talk about energy and how it's being used, how it's changing with COVID, how buildings are being operated. But first, let's talk about Trillium, one of the greatest breweries in the Boston area. So, Charlie, Austin, you guys are rocking the Trilliums today.
Yep. And first off, I want to say on behalf of all of us, of course, that we are sending our thoughts and good wishes to everybody who's managing this this time of great challenges. We're privileged to be able to be continuing to work on sustainability in this time. We think it's important. We've written about the role that we can play in helping companies continue to meet their climate goals and save money at the same time, so they can bring their workers back and help their companies rebound more quickly because their operating expenses are lower and they can continue to fight climate change. So we think we play a role in the bounce back, and we obviously send wishes to everyone to stay healthy and safe. I am rocking a Trillium today. Trillium was listed by Beer Advocate, I believe, or no, Beer Raider, as one of the top five breweries in the country. Heavily skewed to the East Coast. I think we've talked about this, but Trillium was number five. Started in Fort Point in Boston, and now have places in Canton. They've been doing curbside pickup in Canton, so I've been getting out there periodically to do the curbside. I have their Big Bird. I don't usually drink their double IPAs because you got to be a pretty big boy to handle these things. But this is a really good beer. It's called Big Bird. They specialize in these New England IPAs, and that's what I'm drinking today.
So on Charlie's advice, I drove out to Canton myself and wound up with a whole bunch of things. The Saison was delicious. The Pinot Noir Sour was delicious. But today I've got the Dialed In IPA, which is the hazy New England style IPA, but with not just Chardonnay juice, but also Gewürztraminer juice. Who are these people? This is totally so. And take a look. I poured it into my fancy glass. So this is the color. I'm not going to lie. This is the second one I've had in the last 45 minutes. It's that delicious.
In the words of the great Men in Blazers, that's your first, second Dialed In IPA.
Something like that. Really. And it complements well. They do a lot of work with wine grapes, right? And you wouldn't think for sure that wine grapes would pair well with hoppy, hazy New England IPAs, but they do.
Yeah, and the Big Bird is very tasty. It's got some notes of fruit, but for something that's got this much hops, it's really smooth, and that's what they specialize in. So I'm a big fan of the beer. On the sustainability side, they do include environmental sustainability as one of their philanthropies. They support the Emerald Necklace Conservancy, which is protecting Olmsted's Emerald Necklace. A little bit less information about what they're doing in the brewing process on that, but it is one of their core values, and they are by design a value-driven, family-owned and operated brewery.
Yeah, it's, you know, definitely one of the best, and the if I'm not forgotten, Trillium, it is their beer garden that used to be on the Greenway.
Exactly. Last summer when I first began working with you guys, that was not only was the work wonderful, but then after work you can go to the Trillium Beer Garden on the Greenway. I mean, this is heaven itself. But Mike, and then Mike, you have, and you just told me about this for the first time 15 minutes ago, a Spencer Trappist Monk style ale, but it's from Massachusetts. What in the world?
This is actually a Saison, a peach Saison. So I have the Spencer's Fruit Series, and I also learned that Trappist goes all the way back to Belgium, one of my favorite countries to get chocolate from. But I guess Charlie's got some more details about the brewery and the Trappist style. This I will say, very sustainable brewery. We can get into that. But Charlie, what's going on with Trappist? I really don't know.
So the Trappist monks, which is an order of monks, have for centuries brewed a beer, and particularly Belgian style beers, Belgian ales, saisons. Spencer is in Spencer, Mass, at a Trappist monastery, and it is the only monastery in the U.S. that has the traditional Trappist recipe, which is secret. And we're gifted the original Trappist yeast, which is passed on, you know, down the century. So they have the original sort of core ingredients and recipe, and it's a very, very good beer. So I have already pledged to I don't want to give product placement orders, but via online beer delivery service to get Spencer into everybody's hands, and we'll do a proper Spencer round next time.
Yeah, so Spencer, I think it will be a worthy beer and brewery to support some of the things that they've done in terms of sustainability. Obviously, they really take advantage of their facility, the monastery. And they really try to protect the watershed. But they also are leasing space they have several acres that they're leasing for solar. That they're going to build an 18 megawatt solar farm. And that's
18 megawatt?
Yeah.
Wow, holy cow.
That's big.
Yeah. And if anybody doesn't know about solar, 18 megawatts is your average home has like 0.05 of a megawatt. So that's a lot of solar, going to power a lot of homes, and that's a great thing they're doing. But they also built their facility with using a Mass Save's new construction program. They have a high efficiency HVAC system. They've also done a lot of work on, as we've talked about in previous podcasts, in terms of water reduction and trying to reduce and save as much water as possible. So overall, a great brewery, a great beer, and they got the original, you know, yeast, which I didn't know was that important.
Maybe we can get one of the brothers to come on the next podcast. That would be cool.
Yeah, not only that, but of course, I sense a green beers live from Belgium in our future.
Or at least
ship the boys out. Ship the boys and say, oh, well, we just love this beer so much. And introduce us to your brothers in Bruges. There we are. None of this can totally happen.
Yeah, at least in Spencer, Mass.
At least in Spencer, Mass.
Or Spence, you know, we'll start somewhere, but, you know. Trip across the pond, you know.
Well, lose your bust.
Last summer, I visited the Westmalle Brewery in Belgium in the middle of you know, my initiation into the Renew lifestyle. But that's right, and they do cheese and beer, of course, two things that fit very well together. So you know, where you got your cows and you got your yeast, and it's all one happy family.
Yeah, that sounds like a good outing. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I like that term, the Renew lifestyle.
The Renew lifestyle, it just, you have to live it to understand it.
That's right.
Oh.
So with that, Ani, any particular beverages that you are sampling this week?
I got to all the listeners who are listening for the first time, so I don't drink beer or consume alcohol, but I have a bottle of a double black, which I use for water. And the drink that I'm actually excited about is a New England coffee that I got this time. That's the first. So I have this Mr. Coffee little machine at home. So this is the first time I got the New England coffee, and it's really good. I can say that it's better than Should I do this? Should I start comparing?
Absolutely.
Should I do name dropping? Okay. Yeah. It's much better than Dunkin' Donuts. It's better than Starbucks coffee. Ooh. And I need to try the Diesel coffee.
Well, and you know what I like about what you just said, Ani? Rather than wading into the middle of the Starbucks versus Dunkin' divide, which is actually quite contentious, you just slammed both of them.
That's smart. That's absolutely.
It's how, in comparison to the New England coffee, I couldn't help it. Yeah, they're both.
That's good. That's good. Better than both.
Yeah.
I mean, coffee is important. I think as we are all used to having the endless coffee at our office, that has certainly been one of the big changes for the COVID working from home, brewing your own.
Right.
But so I'm glad, Ani, you found a good replacement. And with that, I think we should jump into some ratings on these beers. Charlie, do you want to kick it off with your double IPA? Is it getting to your head, maybe?
The Big Bird, you got to take it in small doses, but it's delicious. I mean, I'm giving it a full 9 for flavor.
Oh, wow.
There's no sustainability score boost on this one because they don't emphasize their sustainability in terms of their brewing process. They do included in their philanthropy, which I appreciate, but I'm going to give it a neutral. So I would give it a 9.
That's a high rating for a double IPA.
Yeah.
I mean, but a 9 without the sustainability boost, I mean, that's way up there.
Yeah. This is a very good brewery, and this is a very good beer. So I'm.
We call that the green up in the past. I have that.
Green up. So there's no green up, but they did very well on flavor alone.
Yeah. Well, I'm dealing with the same brewery, so no green up here either. But boy, the dialed in is dialed in. it's great. It's great. It's not, I mean, it's a little bit resiny, but not too resiny. And I don't know whether it actually is there or not, but at least the knowledge that the grape juice is in there gives it a little bit of a winey character, which is nice and balanced as well. I give it an 8.6.
Okay.
Which is high for Austin.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, in fact, it is. I think that might be the highest I've ever given without a green up.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
That's the 8.6. And I'll say too, that I enjoyed their Saison the other day quite a lot. So,
yeah, I bought that last time I was out there. I got their Saison, the one they were putting in the growler, and it was delicious. Is that the one you got? Yeah.
I got a 500 ml bottle, but it might be the
same one. Same thing. Yeah, 500 ml bottle.
So, yeah, 8.6 for the dialed in.
That's a good score right there. I got to say, this Spencer Fruit Series for fruit beer is pretty good. It's very light, it's refreshing, it's not too peachy. Honestly, I couldn't even tell you it was peach flavored, but it's, you know, I would still give it like a high 7. I'm gonna throw around a 7.6 with a good green up of let's call it a 1.4, and we'll bring it to a 9.
Nice,
yeah,
good overall score.
Good score.
And frankly, if you're gonna put fruit in a beer, you don't want to actually know it's there, in my view. So I think that's good.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's good. It could be a little better. Room for improvement. You know, those monks could keep passing down the recipe and changing it a little bit. So
you don't want to be a slave to tradition, right?
Exactly.
It's valuable, but you know, recognize opportunities for innovation.
Yeah, maybe this is the note they were looking for. So hopefully this could really, really take them to the next level on fruit beers. That wasn't really descriptive or probably helpful, but regardless, good beer. And let's talk about some sustainability. You know, as we sort of alluded to, we're not in the office. Nobody else is probably in their office yet. I know Boston is officially opening offices at, I believe, 25% capacity come June 1st. And, you know, that opens up a lot of questions around energy use in the commercial, office, industrial, right? How much energy is a building with, you know, 5% people in there using versus a building with 100%? What's the energy difference? It's not going to be that much, right? You still have to heat and cool these buildings. The lights are still on. Nobody probably went and unplugged all of their devices before they ran out of there, right? You know, plug power is still, you know, drawn. And so that's a question about what's the proper way to create energy efficiency, the proper way to operate these facilities going forward. And then as people start coming back, the CDC is suggesting or advising that you facility and property owners increase outdoor air, right? You know, start opening up windows, start having outdoor, have fans deliver more outdoor air, right? So that means more air to condition, that means more energy. And that's certainly not the goal that we want, but at the same time, it's necessary. So, from an energy perspective, you know, what are our thoughts on possible solutions long term to this versus short term, because obviously we're in the middle of it, right?
Yeah, and just picking up on your point, Mike, I think what we know, we've all come to know, is that the world will be changed by this pandemic in ways that we can't quite yet forecast or predict. And that it will touch every sector. There was a very interesting piece, I think, in the New York Times this weekend about the unexpected, unknown ways in which the Spanish flu from 1918 affected and changed the world. And in some ways that people didn't even realize. So our sector will change, and it's important to try to understand how, and you pointed to some of those ways. Buildings will be managed differently. Buildings may be occupied differently. Sort of how do we think our sector will change, and how do we respond to that? Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's to the point of the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns. Channeling a bit of Donald Rumsfeld here. It's unclear what will happen after we come out of this, and when and if we will. I mean, they come out. I think a lot of people imagine that we will emerge unchanged. Of course, that's a fallacy. I mean, there will be no return to normal. There simply will be a new normal. So my question for you guys, and you're all more knowledgeable than I am on this, for building management systems. Let's say that we've reopened a building at 25% as Boston will do on June 1st. Is it possible to turn the lights on only for 3 floors? You know, this is a really important sort of detail in the regulation, which is for social distancing within the building. If you're trying to spread everyone out through all 20 floors of a downtown high rise, then I guess 25% capacity means that you're going to have the lights on for all 20 floors, of course, as opposed to packing that 25% capacity in 4 floors. I mean, of course, not everyone. I mean, of course, different companies own different floors, obviously, and so that would be tricky logistically regardless. But I guess what we're looking at is that you're going to have the lights on and the HVAC running for most floors, even though each floor would only be at some you know, tiny percentage capacity, which really seems like an energy nightmare,
right?
Yes. And how could you get creative, sort of in the moment, to cut your energy use? I mean, I'm not seeing it. I mean, it seems like a really tricky puzzle.
I think my first thought when you said that was, If I put myself in the shoes of a building manager or a facility manager, would be to start doing or taking measures of ventilating a floor or a room or an office based on the EUI per company that is present there. So if the energy utilized is much higher, then I'll definitely ensure that the circulation, like CDC expects us to do, will happen. But if the EUI is close to zero and there's hardly any, based on the occupancy, obviously, I can definitely, as a building manager, start segregating or, you know, having a phased approach, plus also being very selective which company or which area of the building, because sometimes even wings matter. So if a wing of a building is facing the ocean, for example, seafront offices, they have the air circulation there is much better versus something that's facing the side that's facing inwards, yeah. You know? So all, and also east and west matters, because if, like, we are looking at, this comes from a case study in New York. We have a project, Renew has a project there, and wherein apartment temperatures it was a very large building which spanned a larger area, but it spanned across east and west, which means there were some apartments which were getting much warmer while the others were very cold. So how do you kind of do the heating and the cooling of those apartments? So those challenges, I think, are devil's in the details, but there is a way to solve it using as much quantifiable data and a very phased and a very selective critical approach to have ventilation done for only those places that you are.
You know, your point, Ani, brings to mind something that we've been talking about at Renew since this all started, which is that, for example, how do you do audits in buildings when you have to social distance and people are shut down? When buildings actually do want to have energy audits. So we've been thinking a lot about smarter audits, automated audits, remote audits, smarter buildings, more technology. To your point, maybe one of the ways that we're going to have to look to get higher efficiencies in a post-COVID world, where the CDC, as Mike mentioned, is suggesting that we increase fresh air turns, which increases energy use, is really emphasizing technology, right? Really emphasizing controls, building management systems, analytics. And all of that costs money. All of that has upfront costs. So, you know, how can we incorporate new business models to make that technology attainable for building owners? But let's play to our strengths in the 21st century and say these buildings are a lot more complicated to run now. Let's throw technology into the mix to try to maintain the efficiencies even as we address new challenges.
Yeah. To piggyback off that, I mean, you know, to try to integrate more outdoor airflow or try to have different parts of the building operating differently at different temps. That's very hard to do when you have a heating and cooling system from the 1950s or even the 1930s, which, you know, some buildings, you know, they were built then and they were all based on that technology, and for the most part, it's still the same, right? It's a central cooling loop and right. How do you sort of modulate that? Well, there are solutions for that now. You can even electrify an entire building and put in very advanced heating and cooling systems that will give you control at a modular level, at a floor by floor level, at a room by room level, which will become even more important as facilities, properties, offices all move into different levels of occupancy. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the next few years. You know, Renew certainly has a solution to help people get there, but it's going to be a combination of efforts, I do believe.
Just to Charlie's point about based on the upfront capital costs, I feel if, like, drawing parallels to e-learning, if companies who do these IoT sensors solutions for buildings, and they have that entry fee at this point discounted, and kind of do a proof case wherein they can provide energy savings even at a time when the occupancy level is low, that should be perceived as very precious case study that they can have to sell more products once businesses get back to normal and they get their fees also up, you know, like that. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm just doing parallels with e-learning and how they are currently discounting and heavily discounting their products for people to use and kind of, learn out of this COVID, basically.
I think, too, it's possible. Imagining, okay, on June 1st, where companies are allowed to have 25% or buildings are allowed to have 25% capacity. But how many companies will think it's worth their while to return only a quarter of their employees to the physical location. Many companies might say, you know, we've actually find ourselves in a bit of a groove. We've figured out how to do this distance thing pretty well. It doesn't actually even serve our interests to have one quarter of the employees in the office with three quarters still at home. So the fact is that even though the regulations are opening up, a lot of companies might wait until you're allowed to have 50% or 75% occupancy to send the people back, in which case building managers will have to be even more alert to exactly what the companies are doing, right? In reach, let's say that you're managing a 20 or 30 story building in downtown. You've got to really be liaising very closely with the management to figure out, well, how many people do you intend to send back and when? And when do I need to turn on the lighting or the HVAC systems? And there could even be, you know, you could have a sort of activist building manager. You could. I mean, it might be sort of out of the mold. I think typically building management people, of course, tend to try to accommodate the tenant or the client, and that's appropriate. But these are strange times, and maybe these strange times that, well, you could have a building manager who says, well, you're only planning to return 25% of your employees. May I suggest that you return them and reorient their desk spaces to Ani's point, I mean, to everyone's points, such that it actually makes more sense in the geographical orientation of the building, that it would be better to have them in the east side of the building than on the west side of the building. Because then right. That means I can only run this piece of the lighting and the HVAC. So it's gonna. I think it might force some building managers to maybe step outside of their comfort zone and to advocate for exactly what would work best, and persuade the tenant that is how they should reintroduce their employees. And, right. and that could be actually a really great development, actually. Yeah.
Absolutely, and points to the question or the issue that we started with, which is the world of building use, building management, and energy use in the built environment, which is the world that we live in. It will never be the same. I mean, you know, I was talking to our co-founder Doug Foy, who used to run the Conservation Law Foundation. He's working with a consortium here in Boston about what will transit and transportation look like post-COVID? Picking up on a thread of what you just said, Austin, I doubt anybody will go into the office 5 days a week ever again, right? Yeah. All of the Renew team comes on public transit from anywhere from half an hour to an hour away. We will be back in the office. We will be together. There's a value to being together. But we've also figured out that we can work pretty effectively from home. And we get another 2 hours a day when we do that. And I said to Doug, I think at least one of the 5 days of a normal work week, we will not be in the office. If everybody makes that decision, that's a 20% cut in public transit.
It's unbelievable.
20% cut in traffic, 20% cut in occupancy, changes hotels, it changes... Now, manufacturers may be different. We have a lot of different, but what's the impact on schools and universities going forward, right? Particularly over the next couple of years. Every type of building use that we're doing projects in is changed forever. How does that change their energy use? How does that change what they need to stay energy efficient? So we're going to all have to think really strategically, but it's fascinating because we don't quite know how it's all going to change.
No one will be more impacted than Massachusetts Bay Transit Authority. Oh, man.
Right. And we know they deal with change real well.
It has to go out to these people. I mean, really, I mean, you want to talk, it's difficult enough managing a transit system under normal circumstances. And now the MBTA has to figure out how to adjust to a totally new commuting paradigm.
Right.
And then predict what that paradigm will be. Very right. tricky. I mean, almost impossible. So I mean, Godspeed, yeah. guys.
I mean, right, exactly. In cities that are more controlled by their local government, or citizens are more controlled by the local government, and to be very specific, I'm talking about Delhi, New Delhi. Back in India. So what they started was, I mean, this can only be, again, just cautionary tale, this can only be in countries where they can actually control the citizens' habits,
I saw some weird videos of people getting beaten by like yardsticks.
I mean, all the loiterers outside were really beaten. Yeah, just going to my point about New Delhi, what they did was they have all the even number of all cars with the registered with even number or something to go at to travel from 7:30 to 11:30, and then their return time is also set, and there's another set of vehicles with odd numbers who can start at different times. So the traffic is also, this was a traffic solution that they came up with long time back. They're kind of bringing something of that sort back so that they can have very building occupancy should be such that it's limited to whatever level they want. I don't remember what that number is, but they have people coming at essentially different shifts, the way factories do it for so many years, but now office spaces are also going to do it. So that MBTA could think of a very long-term strategy wherein they kind of ensure if you're going into the seaport area, if you're using some specific lines like the green and the red run at this time, while they, you know, they could definitely come up with something.
An entirely new system optimization scheme. And one that delivers much better energy, but then also operational efficiency. I mean, there's a holy grail here and an opportunity to rethink running, right, that rush hour trains versus off-peak trains is inherently inefficient. Horribly, I mean, unimaginably inefficient. I mean, right, your average occupancy for a T train is who knows what it is, 10%? 15%, because off-peak trains are basically empty, whereas on-peak trains are full. This is madness. And let's take COVID as an opportunity to flatten, to levelize ridership, and save dramatically on energy costs. And it's a similar concept with buildings and in every other piece of the energy system.
Right. Charlie, this sort of it was before my time, but didn't the U.S. try to do something like this with the oil embargo and gas?
I was about to say that you guys were way too young to remember this. It's funny. I huge points to you, Mike, because I was about to say I was certainly the only one in living memory that remembers this. I may have been the only one that was alive on this podcast. But in the oil crisis of the late 70s, Ani, to your point, you could only buy gas on certain days, depending on the last number of your license plate.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So the U.S. has a history of this in crisis. Yeah, exactly. He lost an election because of it.
Jimmy paid real good for that.
For example, you know, it alternated days, and so you could only buy gas for your car on, and the gas stations put up a sign, you know, today's an even number day, and if you had an odd number, they would refuse to sell you gas. But, you know, to the larger point and back to our sector, the building sector, all of this speaks to the challenges going forward to try to continue to meet sustainability and particularly climate change emissions goals in a completely new world. Right. I've been fascinated by the media coverage that links COVID to climate change as shared challenges, that explores environmental justice and the extent to which the neighborhoods in this country that have had the highest percentage of air pollution are the ones that are suffering the most from COVID. The way that the articles that have covered the continued importance of fighting climate change in a post-COVID world. So there's a lot of consciousness, at least among sort of mainstream media outlets, about the connection between what we do and COVID. And going forward, we have this challenge of, first of all, how do all of us that are worried or focus on energy efficiency continue to see that happen in a world that's dramatically changed? But second of all, you know, as the emissions reductions, which have resulted purely as a function of people staying home, disappear, you know, how can we continue to reduce emissions, you know, in a changed world, and how can we to the point that all of you just made around transportation, how can we actually use this as an opportunity to think smarter and be smarter? We were already talking about that before COVID hit. You know, the last half of last year's On the Green Beers podcast was about the changing energy marketplace. Little did we know that the entire world was going to be, you know, thrown up for grabs. So we've got that on top of everything else. So.
Yeah. So I think with that, you know, let's leave it there and just let everybody know going forward with Green Beers, we will be starting down and continuing the path of what does a roadmap to electrification look like? How does it change in regards to COVID and continuing on with some of these discussions over the next few months? So with that, thanks everyone for listening and talk soon.
Thanks guys. See you soon.
Thanks.
Bye now.